we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Western Canada's only program focusing on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is September the 30th, 2016. I am your host, Jen Dobell, and I'm joined here today with our operator, Allison Cole.
Hello.
Shauna Smith.
Hi there.
Daniela Reiser.
Hi.
And myself, Jen Dobell. And Daniela, you have a special guest here today.
Yes, I do. I have my niece from Calgary, Amy.
Hi.
Hi. She's visiting and she's joining us today. So
welcome.
I'm really excited.
And her mom.
Thank you.
Yeah, and her mom.
Hi.
We're all in here. It's a busy room today.
Today is World Farmed Animal Awareness Day.
We will begin by talking about common, inhumane, industry standard practices, which animals are the victims of in our Canadian agricultural industry. As most animal rights activists are aware of, when we try to tell our friends and family what happens in the Canadian industry, most don't believe it. And if we show them slaughterhouse footage, they often say, that doesn't happen here, that's happening elsewhere. But we are fortunate to have some undercover investigators working in Canada to expose the very incidents that are actually happening and are legal practice in the animal agricultural industry in Canada. So following that discussion about the industries that our animals are involved in, we will end on a happy note, an interview with Ellie Lax, founder of the Gentle Barn Sanctuary. Stay tuned for heartwarming stories of hope and inspiration and the best turkey story you'll ever hear. Last weekend, Vancouver activists had two opportunities to advocate for animals. On Saturday, approximately 10 activists attended the Bacon Con conference at the PNE Playgrounds. We handed out vegan bacon, vegan pulled pork, which was made of jackfruit, and educated the attendees as they stood in line. The event was a total flop as there was hardly any bacon, and only seven of the 100 vendors that were supposed to be there showed up. Guests were outraged that they had spent $25 on their tickets, and the animal rights activists went to the Facebook page afterwards for the Bacon Con to find out how disappointed everybody was and to take that opportunity to educate them about why we were there. So I was at that event, and I think I'm the only one here who was at that event, so I'll just talk a little bit about that. We have David Espister's bacon from Plant-Based Foods and Natural Products that we were giving out as samples, and very few people were taking them. I think that we were perceived as the enemy at that event, even though it was a peaceful demonstration with signs explaining what happens in the industry. I personally walked along the lineup of people waiting to get in and very politely offered them slices and told them that it was pieces of vegan bacon made from seitan.
Would you say that the just for people who don't know what a bacon con is, it's a conference for bacon lovers, would say, or I guess it was supposed to be sort of an exhibit trade show type thing.
Exactly. Yeah. So there were supposed to be 100 vendors, and some of the food options that were promised, which actually were not there, were bacon crumbles on top of ice cream and bacon donuts.
Right.
All kinds of things that sound pretty disgusting to me, honestly.
I've had vegan versions of those. They're okay. I've had vegan bacon-covered donuts. But I know. We all think it's disgusting when we really know and think about where that actually comes from. Living sentient beings. Pigs who are our friends, actually.
Exactly. I had difficulty feeling sympathy for people who were upset about their $25 they wasted when I thought about what was really going on behind the scenes at a bacon event where the animals are really the ones that have a true complaint and no voice to be heard. So I don't know if anybody here read the comments on the Bacon Con Facebook page.
I unfortunately did. I don't normally like to read comments on things like that because they drive me crazy. And I kind of feel like I have better things to do. But I had to speak up when someone told you, Jen, to get a life. I just had to.
Thank you. I loved what you said, actually.
That was just one of the infuriating comments on there. But I just wonder, I don't know. I think people, I think that bacon makes people crazy, like ignorant, you know, like they kind of just kind of go like they're not thinking in a sane, straightforward manner because they want to defend something that is just so important to them. But really, in the grand scheme of things, they're not looking as to how it affects others. I know some of the other comments on there were like, you know, this doesn't affect anyone. I have the right to make my own choice. And then some of the vegan activists spoke up and said it actually affects, you know, all things around the world. And when you're hurting a living sentient being, you know, that's my right to speak up, to speak out against that. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of valid points there. I don't know if it really, I mean, some of the people on there just did not seem to be able to understand where the vegan activists were coming from, right, which I found to be, it's really disheartening, actually.
It's true. Shauna, you had something you want to say?
Yeah, I noticed that you had put on those comments to watch Cowspiracy and, you know, realize that it affects more than just yourself.
Right, and Cowspiracy is
someone,
what?
Cowspiracy is a documentary that highlights the environmental disaster that is caused by animal agriculture. And one of the commenters said that he's already seen it and he cannot believe that you believe in that type of pseudoscience.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I was like, what does he mean by pseudoscience?
I didn't even respond to that one.
I did, though. All I said was, and I didn't even promote veganism, actually. I just said that for me, I don't like to look silly. So I would like to, you know all the facts before I decide to put my opinion out there so I don't look like an idiot. And I didn't actually say anything about veganism, and he liked my comment. And then I was like, huh, maybe I didn't make it clear enough that I'm supporting vegans. So I went back and edited it and said, go vegan, and he unliked my comment.
I didn't notice that. That's really
I did,
funny.
And it made me laugh really hard because he only was supporting what I was saying because he thought I was supporting him.
Right. And then suddenly it makes no sense to him.
Yeah.
Daniela?
And we've had that before where vegan is kind of just hearing the word run, right? They they think, but once you know that people are trying to talk up for other human beings and animals, like human animals and non-human animals, and show the facts of how their impacts have, but they have to be ready to hear the message, and some are and some aren't. So
I think in this kind of forum too, sorry, Daniela, think this was a forum where people were feeling attacked.
Right.
And ultimately, as you reported, Jen, the event itself was a disaster. Everyone wanted their money back.
Right.
So they weren't in good spirits as it was anyways. And then for, you know, the vegan activists to call them out for, it's just really, to me, when I look at an event like that, I just wonder, like, where is our world going? Like, what kind of a society do we live in? And I'm sure you all feel the same too. It's just, it is really frustrating for us. And I felt that the comments from the vegan activists on this Facebook page were very constructive. Right. And I mean, I felt like someone said, I'm not going to watch your stupid documentaries like Earthlings or Cowspiracy. I felt like saying to her, you know, I'll do you a trade. I'll watch a documentary that you suggest that promotes bacon or whatever your cause is if you watch Earthlings or Cowspiracy. Like, I would feel like, you know, fair is fair, right? Mm-hmm. I'll listen to you. You listen to me.
That would have been a good idea.
Right, but I didn't feel, though, that, as I said, I had to get off there. Like, it's so infuriating to me.
It
uses up a lot of my brain power that could be otherwise put to more things that do better, I think.
Well, so. I stayed with that discussion for about 2 days solid.
Wow.
By the end of it, I sent a message, excuse me, just basically saying the very truth from my soul. I just said, the state of this world and these apathetic and ignorant attitudes makes me absolutely depressed. It is everybody's duty to pay rent on this planet by being informed on the latest news in regards to how the animal agriculture industry is affecting the state of the world, water use, deforestation, animal abuse, and the health of human beings. And even the World Health Organization has stated that meat and dairy products are unhealthy. So, I mean, I just basically said, you know, we're all adults and we all have a responsibility to keep up on this kind of thing. And even when I was at the event, I said to people, this is my Sunday. I'd rather be doing other things. Since I became involved in animal rights activism, I've given up on my hobbies and I do this all the time. It isn't a passion. It isn't a hobby. It's a duty. And it becomes more of a duty for us when so few people are helping. And that frustrates me.
And also, everybody thinks that we're doing this against factory farming. But when I hear people say, oh, it's family farms that you're destroying, but family farms can still have 50,000 cows. It could just be owned by a family. Mm-hmm. So that all these excuses are not going to hold up to stay complicit in this matter.
Right. Well, let's move on. So on the same weekend, on the that happened on the Saturday, and on the Sunday, activists showed the Earthlings documentary on their laptops downtown. And Daniela was here for this event. We also handed out vegan bacon and pulled pork samples again, which were a huge hit, as I think we had a more open-minded crowd. And we educated the public about Thanksgiving food options with brochures that Daniela had made. And this event was really well received by the public. Daniela, you've got some great stories.
Right. So I designed signs that said stop violence, and I first, we had them in a bag, and then I handed out leaflets, and I thought, if I hold the sign stop violence, less people will come up and want anything from me, because they're like, oh, I'm going to avoid what she has to say. But actually, I was holding these signs, and more people came up, and it was a conversation starter. They said, what do you exactly mean? What's the violence? And I gave them a brochure, and I said, we're asking people to not celebrate the holidays with violence, and having a dead animal or body part on their plate is violence. And the more we're aware to violence in general, we're also more compassionate to people. And one story reminded me of you, Amy. There was this girl come up and she said, I'm vegetarian. And I said, you're awesome. That's a great thing. And her dad came up and she said, but I have a question for you. What's wrong with dairy? And I said, well, the problem with dairy is that the baby calves are removed from their moms at the very first day. And the male calves are useless to the dairy industry. And we never see them because they're slaughtered as babies. And same as the little chicks with the egg industry. We just don't ever think of the males that they're day old and they're shredded alive. And she just, you know, big eyed. And she's like, thank you so much. And her dad said, thank you. And she says, I'm 11. And I was 11 when I went vegetarian. And it takes always more exposures in life and the answers that you want to or you're ready to hear. And I think you know about that too, right? You're aware of it.
Yeah, I'm like aware of just like a lot of people in my school. I feel they're just getting the message and they're just being more open to trying new things. And it's not all like, we want to make a change and this is a good start by right. teaching younger people.
Exactly. And you're the next generation that's going to change
the world. Yeah, we're the generation who's going to change the world. So why don't we get taught it?
Exactly. Perfect. Yeah. Thanks.
And all your friends are like little sponges for their minds and information mm-hmm. that you can give them. Do you feel comfortable talking to your friends about this?
Like, yeah. I mean, like, we don't really learn about this in school, which is kind of disappointing. We learn about just like the old curriculum and whatever.
And the dairy industry comes in with their, what, Moo Olympics?
Yeah, Moo Olympics. And it's like they're just selling milk and I don't get it. And I feel like we're not doing enough to change people's minds. And kids don't, they want to learn about new things, and we're not really teaching them new things. And that's what they're thriving for, is to, like, grow up and make a difference, because all kids want to make a difference. But sometimes they just don't have the resources, like, their family don't support that, and it's just, yeah.
Right. And that's what we're here for. We're trying to change people's minds.
Yeah.
We want to save the planet, and we want to save animals and help humanity.
And it's growing.
It is growing. You help us, okay? Young activists, I think, are even more influential than the older ones. But I don't think if you were at that bacon conference, people would be giving you any attitude.
Yeah.
You're too cute. We should bring you out. Are you coming out this weekend for some of our events?
Chalking event?
Okay. You're a good artist?
Yeah, she is.
Right. And her mom.
You can draw animals? Yeah, so, you know, another thing that was happening at the Earthlings event was there was this busker named Tom who was playing his guitar on the speaker right next to us. And we didn't have a chance to talk to him in the beginning, but between songs, he would often make announcements into his microphone to all the people walking around downtown, and he would read out our signs. And then he would plea with the public to please be kind to animals.
And stop violence.
Yeah, yeah, he was reading your signs out, and I went up and gave him a hug afterwards. We gave him a big donation, and I said, Tom, are you here regularly? He said, yeah, I'm usually here Sundays. You want to come together on Sundays? And I said, you got a deal. I think we're a great team. Awesome. We can use his microphone to get our message out. And he was playing all my favorite classic rock from the 70s, too. It was awesome.
The best music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the farming industry in Canada. As animal rights advocates, we're constantly educating the public about the injustices faced by animals in our food production systems. This exposure of the truth must be accompanied by informing the public that there's no such thing as humane animal products, and that it is possible to obtain all of our essential nutrients through a plant-based diet and supplementation. Up until a few years ago, I believed that we needed protein from animal products. I didn't know that I had been brainwashed by the powerful agricultural industry who had their own agenda of making large profits at the expense of animal welfare, planetary destruction through extreme water use, and deforestation. Daniela, why don't you begin by telling us about Canada's egg industry?
Yes, so 90% of grocery store eggs and almost 100% of eggs used in restaurants, bakeries, and packaged foods come from battery cage tents. These cages are located in long, windowless, warehouse-like barns, some stacked two stories high, and hens are stuffed into wire-bottom cages the sizes of filing drawers. There are approximately 8 hens to a cage, and they don't have room to spread their wings. They have been genetically manipulated to produce 1 egg per day. A hen's egg is its menstrual cycle, so they normally only produce 1 per month. Excessive egg production causes calcium depletion in their bodies, as the shells require this mineral. This leads to fragile bones and associated with suffering. The hens have their beaks cut off so they don't peck at each other due to the stress of confinement. This is a very painful procedure, as they have nerves in their beaks and no painkillers are ever used. Many hens have their necks or feet caught in the wire cages, and they starve or dehydrate to death, being unable to reach their food and water. Often dead, rotting hens are next to live ones for hours or days until a worker collects them. Dying hens have their necks pulled by workers to kill them. Hens frequently have prolapses, where their insides basically come out due to the loss of smooth muscle from laying too many eggs or eggs that are too big for young hens. This leads to a bloody, painful situation for the hens. This occurs mainly in battery cage hens who suffer calcium and magnesium deficiencies, as these nutrients affect smooth muscle tone. Another factor affecting this is excessive light exposure made to increase egg production from commercial farming practices. There is no vet care given for these hens in any circumstances, and they are exposed to flock cannibalization via the exposed areas of their bodies.
Now let's talk about the dairy industry. Many of you may have seen the undercover investigation by Mercy for Animals at the Chilliwack Dairy. Let me paint a picture for you of a typical large-scale dairy farm. In large operations, cows are in warehouses, not on grassy fields. Cows are kept in a constant state of pregnancy in order to produce milk. Most people actually think that dairy cows just naturally produce milk all the time, which makes no biological sense. But I admit that as a child, I thought this too. The mothers who are about to give birth are kept in an enclosed area on hard, slatted floors, not very nice for a large pregnant animal. The babies are taken away from the mother the day they are born so that humans can drink all their milk. Sometimes the mothers and babies bellow for each other for weeks. The male babies are never going to produce milk and are considered a byproduct of the industry. They are put in tiny veal crates and fed formula, depleted of necessary nutrients and iron, and chained so they can barely move around so that their muscle stays soft for consumers. They are slaughtered when they are only a few months old. The female babies are to be future milk machines and will spend their lives, as their mothers did, being artificially inseminated repeatedly until their bodies give out at about 5 years of age. Artificial insemination is performed by taking semen from a bull who is kept on site just for this purpose and injecting it into the cow, while simultaneously a worker places their entire arm into the cow's anus. The bulls are placed on a piece of equipment that the industry calls a rape rack to have semen extracted by manually stimulating the bull. On the milking parlor, which is the circular apparatus that you see the cows on, workers often jab the cows and hit them with canes to make them move onto their place on the parlor. The cows are afraid and resist going onto here. They often break their tails or kink them. Mastitis is common, and workers are instructed to press and squeeze on the nipples to get the chunks of milk or hardened blood through that nipple so that they can get more milk. No medication or painkillers are given, and no vet care is given. Cows normally live to be 25 years old. In the dairy industry, it's common for them to become unproductive for the industry and unable to walk by age 5. Often they are picked up by a tractor and put onto the truck to slaughter, where they become meat for the fast food industry. Shauna, can you tell us about the pork industry?
Thousands of pregnant pigs are confined in gestation crates for their entire lives, in warehouses and on filthy concrete floors. They are unable to turn around or lie down comfortably, and suffer from pressure wounds and injuries from chewing on the metal bars or broken necks from trying to escape. They are driven mad from stress and boredom and often have prolapsed uteruses. They do not receive vet care. Sick pigs are beaten and pulled by their ears when they are taken to be killed. Often they are still conscious and blinking, even after having a metal bolt driven into their skulls. Piglets have their testicles, tails, and teeth cut off without any anesthetic, so they do not chew these parts off each other due to the psychosis that occurs from the stress of captivity and daily fear and abuse from workers. Piglets who are sick or do not grow fast enough are slammed headfirst onto the concrete to kill them. They often fall through the concrete slats of the floor and die amongst a pit of feces and urine. Below their mother, where they once nursed through the concrete bars of her tiny pen.
And now for some information on the broiler chicken industry. Many people don't know that the broiler chickens are the ones that we eat when we go to the grocery store and buy them either whole or as chopped up pieces. Chickens are typically raised in huge, filthy barns full of dust, where ammonia from their urine burns the eyes of the workers, who must wear goggles or masks. One can imagine how this would feel for the chickens, who live amongst it and are much closer to that level on the floor. They often experience difficulty moving around due to their unnatural heavy weight, which makes them more profitable. They are killed at 40 weeks old, and chicken catchers are brought in to roughly capture as many as they can carry and fling them violently into tiny cages made of mesh, where they will be taken to slaughter on a truck. Often their feet become trapped in the cages and are pulled off upon emptying at the slaughterhouse. Sometimes, instead of having people catch the chickens, a machine is used to suck them in from the barn and into the baskets for transport. The ride to the slaughterhouse exposes them to all weather conditions. Across Canada, you can imagine the ranges in temperatures. And they are crammed tightly in cages, unable to spread their wings. The chickens, who unfortunately end up in the middle portion, typically die from heat or cold, and maybe it's not unfortunate because the fate that awaits them at the slaughterhouse is much scarier. In winter, entire truckloads can be frozen and dead on arrival. At the slaughterhouse, chickens are roughly handled, pulled from their crates, and if their feet are caught in the mesh, feet become ripped off live birds. They are shackled upside down on a large conveyor machine where their bodies are taken to a neck slicing machine and then dunked into an electrical bath and eventually have their feathers ripped off prior to being dismembered for packaging. This is a quick moving process as time is money, and often the chickens are only hung by one leg, causing them broken wings and legs, and even worse, not being properly positioned to be killed by the neck slicing machine, which results in them being put through the electrical bath while fully conscious. Birds who are not properly emptied from the crates of the slaughter truck due to legs being caught in the mesh baskets are put through a scalding hot chemical wash cycle. Workers have seen them alive after this frightening process. They are pulled from the baskets afterwards and hung up on the conveyor machine for processing. And now the beef industry. After birth, beef cows typically spend the next 4 to 5 months grazing with their mothers until they reach a weight of about 160 to 230 kilograms. The calves are then weaned from their mothers and may be sent to a back grounding lot where their diets are changed from grass to hay and grains to begin fattening them for slaughter. When they reach around 400 kilograms, the cows are moved to feedlots. Calves who are not backgrounded go directly to feedlots. Feedlots, also called finishing lots, raise serious welfare concerns, the main issues being crowding and inappropriate feed. The largest feedlots can accommodate up to 40,000 animals. Cows are social animals, yet the stable social groupings established on the range are destroyed in feedlots, throwing the animals into social chaos. Cattle are initially fed a diet consisting mainly of hay and forages, with their feed gradually becoming 90% grain. Grain feed causes the cattle to gain weight more quickly than grass, thus making their flesh fatter and their meat more appealing to consumers. However, grain feeding wreaks havoc on the animals' digestive systems because cattle are ruminants suited to eating grass, not grains. Grain can cause bloating, diarrhea, and extreme discomfort. In addition to the issues with feedlot conditions, cattle are subjected to a number of painful procedures. Branding is used as a way to identify cattle ownership on a farm of origin. It entails pressing a hot metal bar against the animal's body, causing third-degree burns. It is an extremely painful and stressful condition for the animal to be in, and is done without anesthetic or anesthesia, or analgesia, sorry, and can cause weight loss and anorexia. Castration, the removal of the testes in male cattle, is usually performed at the same time as branding, when the animal is between 2 weeks and 2 months old. It is typically performed with a knife, but can also be performed with the emasculator or the elasturator, both of which stop the flow of the testes, causing them to eventually fall off. This painful procedure is also performed without anesthesia. Dehorning is also an extremely painful procedure, particularly for older animals whose horns are more developed and full of sensitive nerve endings. The procedure is often performed by stockmen, not veterinarians, and without anesthetic or pain relief. Most animals must be physically restrained during the procedure because of the distress and pain involved. And in the turkey industry, our final industry, workers beat, throw, and kick turkeys who are raised in large barns, just like chickens. Animals who are afraid of being handled run away, and the workers resort to violent means in order to catch them. Turkeys who are sick and beaten to death or have their necks broken. Mercy for Animals, an animal rights group who performs undercover investigations, exposes these cruel practices in the industries we've discussed here today, and you can find them on their website.
Every weekday from 7 to 8 a.m., Media Mornings brings you independent news and culture you won't hear anywhere else.
Daily headlines, interviews, countless local voices, and our Latin America report help you make sense of today's news from Coast Salish territories to global affairs.
Guests include David Suzuki.
Media become hostages of the corporate agenda, and thank God for the independents like you.
Indigenous activists like Pam Palmater.
This kind of radio show helps inform Indigenous and non-Indigenous people and hopefully inspire our Indigenous citizens to take action.
Social justice advocates like Maude Barlow.
I continue to be America's gas tank, although now we want to be the gas tank for the world.
Artists like Kenny Starr.
Change is created by lots of different types of activists.
Ray Spoon.
Gender is limiting and affecting everyone.
And authors like Michael Parenti.
The state is at the service of these corporations.
So tune in to Media Mornings, weekdays 7 to 8 a.m.
on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM and podcasting at W2Media.ca.
And now for events. We once again are going to be talking about the Worldwide Vegan Chalk Bomb. This event will coincide with World Day for Farmed Animals on October 2nd. Please participate in this coordinated worldwide effort to help spread the vegan message. You can do this with friends or by yourself. No matter where you are, you can be a part of this movement. Chalktivism is an opportunity for us to reach people in an unexpected and engaging way. When we get enough people to do this at the same time, we'll become newsworthy. Then we'll have the opportunity to reach a much bigger audience, and potentially in the millions. The last event that had over 1,600 people sign up, so they need your help to make this one even bigger. Together, let's drop a vegan chalk bomb on the world. The idea is simple. Buy chalk. Walmart has Crayola sidewalk chalk for $7 a box, and you can also order through Amazon. Write a positive vegan message in a public space. Post pictures of your message on social media along with the hashtag #VeganChalkChallenge. Please invite all your vegan friends and share this event in your vegan networks. If you work for a vegan organization, if you're a community organizer, or if you have a large following, please help by promoting this event. Visit www.veganchalkchallenge.org for inspiration and more information. If you need ideas for what to write, check out this list at www.veganchalkchallenge.org/what-to-write. There will be another Earthling experience and a pre-Thanksgiving activism this Sunday on October 2nd. And the pre-Thanksgiving activism will be with the leaflets made by our very own Daniela and her partner Bernie. And for those of you who don't know, the Earthling Experience is a public demonstration with the intent to educate and get people to learn and be made aware of the horrors that animals we deem as food have to go through to be put on our plates. You can help by bringing a laptop or a tablet, if you can, the more the better. Download Earthlings or similar footage off of YouTube onto your device and let the public know why animal agriculture is destroying the planet. If you don't have a device or would prefer to leaflet or hold a sign or hand out samples, they will need people to do that as well. The last event to be announced is that the Salmon Confidential showing was supposed to be yesterday. It now has been moved to the 13th of October and will still be held at Eternal Abundance at 8 o'clock. A minimum donation of $10 for entry will go to Dr. Morton's work. And there will also be a Q&A after that. If you have any animal-friendly events that you would like to have announced on the show, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices of Vancouver.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
And now for news. Investors urge food companies to shift from meat to plants. A group of 40 investigators managing $1.25 trillion in assets have launched a campaign to encourage 16 global food companies to change the way they source protein for the products to help to reduce environmental and health risks. The investors, which include the fund arm of insurer Aviva and several Swedish state pension funds, wrote to the food companies on September 23rd, urging them to respond to the material risks of industrial farming and to diversify into plant-based sources of protein. Among the companies targeted were Kraft Heinz, Nestle, Unilever, Tesco, and Walmart. A statement by the Farm Animal Investment Risk and Return Initiative, which organized the investor group, said on Monday. The world's over-reliance on factory farm livestock to feed the growing global demand for protein is a recipe for financial, social, and environmental crisis, said Jeremy Coller, founder of FAIR, of the FAIR Initiative, and chief investment officer at a private equity company, Coller Capital. Pollution from the intensive livestock production is already at a too high of a level, while safety and welfare standards are too low, and the industry cannot cope with the projected increase in global protein demand. Investors want to know if major food companies have a strategy to avoid the protein bubble and to profit from a plant-based protein market, set to grow by 8.4% annually over the next 5 years. The campaign follows an Oxford University study which said that $1.5 trillion in healthcare and climate change-related costs could be saved by 2050 if people reduce their reliance on meat in their diet. The study also pointed to growing political pressure on companies to change, citing a consultation in Denmark on the introduction of a red meat tax and the Chinese government's plan to reduce its citizens' meat consumption by 50%. Ella McKinley, ethics analyst at Australian Ethical Investment, which is also taking part of the campaign, said the need to change food production models was essential to help limit climate change. Forward-looking companies can now move to encourage more sustainable diets by reducing reliance on meat and growing the market for plant-based protein alternatives. In the process, companies make their own protein supply chains more resilient to future shocks, she said. The other companies written to by FAIR were General Mills, Mondelez International, Ahold Delhaize, the Cooperative Group, Costco Wholesale Corporation, Kroger Company, Marks & Spencer, W.M. Morrison Supermarkets, Oscado, Sainsbury, and Whole Foods Market. A Nestle spokeswoman said that the company did not use much meat, so our main strategy is not to focus on replacing the meat that we do use, as its impact would be minimal. Our main opportunity lies in innovating new products using alternate proteins. In terms of timetables and targets, this is still a relatively new area, where in many countries, the consumers are not fully prepared to replace or reduce meat in their diets. Our focus is to innovate great-tasting solutions to encourage consumers to try them, and over time, to make small, sustainable shifts towards a higher, plant-based, and more balanced diet. Next, we have the story about the Montreal pit bull ban. I'm sure the majority of you are aware of it, that it has been passed. And on October 3rd, the shelters will be forced to murder all of the pit bulls. And I say murder because they use the word euthanasia, but I have the definition right here. The painless killing of a patient suffering from an incurable and painful disease or an irreversible coma. The practice is illegal in most countries. So Montreal SPCH is to take legal action against the new bylaw by targeting pit bulls. Montreal's SPCA will ask the Quebec Superior Court to review the city's new animal control bylaw in a bid to have the sections targeting pit bull type dogs declared illegal. The SPCA said the action will be presented on Monday courthouse. Will be presented at the Montreal courthouse on Thursday. The bylaw, which will ban new ownership of pit bulls and pit bull type dogs, was passed by the city on September 27th and goes into effect on October 3rd. But the SPCA wants the sections of the new bylaw concerning pit bull type dogs declared illegal on the following grounds. It discriminates by creating additional and punitive obligations for owners and guardians of pit bull type dogs, which the SPCA argues are not dangerous. It is vague and imprecise in its definition of pit bull type dogs, and it makes it impossible to know which dogs fall into this category. It fails to include a means to challenge the designation of a dog as a pit bull type breed. It contravenes Article 898.1 of the Civil Code of Quebec, which grants animals the status of sentient beings, as well as sections of the Animal Welfare and Safety Act. It is unreasonable that the bylaw treats all pit bull type dogs as dangerous dogs, despite what the agency says in lack of credible evidence that they are inherently dangerous.
Our show today is dedicated to farm animals, so I will be speaking with Ellie Lax, founder of the Gentle Barn Sanctuaries, located in Santa Clarita, California, and Knoxville, Tennessee. The Gentle Barn aims to ensure a more peaceful future for children by teaching them kindness, compassion, and empathy for all living beings. Children who differ in appearance, religion, race, sex, or language are taught unconditional love and understanding towards others. The Gentle Barn also hosts visits for individuals from seniors' homes, veterans, and those suffering from PTSD, individuals from group homes, mental health care facilities, foster homes, and schools, to teach them that even though they are all different on the outside, on the inside, we are all the same and are deserving of the same rights, respect, and freedom. Often the visitors share similar pasts, and hearing the animals' stories of trauma shows them that change is possible. As they see that the animals are safe there, the visitors begin to open up and feel safe too. The unconditional love and non-judgmental attitude of the animals can often reach individuals more deeply and effectively than people can. When they see how the abused animals have learned to forgive and overcome their past, the animals become role models, helping people reach their goals of surpassing their pain and reaching for bright futures. The 170 animals at the Gentle Barn all have histories of abuse, neglect, abandonment, or worse. They have been rehabilitated with traditional and non-traditional medicine, top-quality nutrition, and countless hours in the arms of staff and volunteers. The sanctuary is home to horses, donkeys, cows, pigs, sheep, goats, turkeys, chickens, llamas, dogs, and more. And today I have the pleasure of having the founder of the Gentle Barn on the phone today for an interview, Ellie Lax. Thanks for being here, Ellie.
Thanks for having me.
I love your story about feeling a strong desire to help animals since you were 7 years old. And in 1999, you founded this sanctuary. You majored in psychology and special education, which is perfect for helping people who are at risk, abused, or traumatized. There are many farm sanctuaries which operate more like a petting zoo than a true sanctuary, but the Gentle Barn isn't like that. I love that you work to truly give the animals a voice in the way that you educate your visitors. You've taken in animals who were so sick and injured, some at death's door, who were unlikely to be adopted by other sanctuaries that prefer healthier animals, and you tell their stories in the hope of inspiring compassion in the visitors who may have had a similar past. Can you tell us a story which resulted in a breakthrough for one of your visitors who was suffering from the effects of abuse?
Yeah, sure. We have a lot of stories, but one of the stories that comes to mind is we had a girl who was a selective mute. So she was born normally functioning. She was blind, but she loved to sing and dance, and she was a normal, happy, healthy little girl. And then the earthquake happened in 94. And something must have happened during the earthquake. I don't know if she was terrified or screaming or crying. I don't know if she was repressed during that time. But something happened, and she never spoke again. And I met her when she was 16, and she hadn't spoken a word in 12 years. And no matter what therapy they did, they just could not change her mind to speak. So she joined our program at 16, and at first, when she started our program, we would introduce her to the chickens and turkeys and give her animals to hold and to love. And the counselors were extremely worried that she would hurt the animals because she had fits of rage in the classroom and at home, where she would claw and bite and kick, and she was very, very angry. But one of the things that we do at the Gentle Barn is, whether you're a human or an animal, we let you tell us who you are. So we don't go based on what you've done. We don't go based on what people have said about you. We don't go based on history at all. When you're in front of us for the first time, both human and animal, we give you an opportunity to define who you are. So when this girl came to our program, I didn't want to go based on what the counselors were saying or what she had always done. I wanted to give this girl a chance to redefine herself. And so we gave her a chicken to hold and turkeys to pet and cows to hug and horses to walk around with. And in the 2 years that she came to our program, she never, ever, not even once, had a fit of rage, ever. She was never angry. She had a huge smile plastered on her face from beginning to end, and she was always gentle and kind to the animals. So it very soon became my mission in life to help her to talk again. But I didn't know really how to do that. I mean, thinking that every teacher or therapist in her life had not made headway, what could I possibly do? But I remembered that before she was 4 years old, she loved to sing and dance. And we did have a turkey that loved to sing and dance as well. We had a turkey named Chloe. And previous to this, we had taken her to an event where she loved having people hug her, pet her, hold her, and she was very gentle and peaceful with people. But this particular event had a stage with musicians on it, and when the band started playing, this turkey, who was very calm, all of a sudden stood up and started running as fast as she could to the stage. And no matter how many times I brought her back to the booth, the turkey ran as fast as she could the minute I turned my back to the stage. And she would close her eyes and rock back and forth to the music, which blew me away. And so when we brought her home that day, I vowed that she would have music for the rest of her life. So in the barnyard, we always had a radio. And no matter where the radio was and no matter what kind of music we were playing, right next to the radio was Chloe with her eyes half closed, swaying back and forth to the music. So I explained this story to this girl, and I asked her, will she please help provide music for Chloe? Music is so important for her soul and for her healing and for her happiness. I said, will you help me sing to her? So in the beginning, it was me singing to Chloe and the girl just sitting next to me petting Chloe. But in a few months, the girl started humming with me, and then a few months after that, she started singing with me, and by the time she graduated our program from the Gentle Barn, she was fully vocal, both at the Gentle Barn and at school and at home. And the counselors and her family and her friends just could not believe it. And so, you know, she decided to speak again because of a turkey and their shared love of music.
That's incredible. That makes me want to hear all the other stories. I love that story. Thank you for sharing that. It's been 2 years since we last had you on the Animal Voices show, and I'm curious to know if there have been any new developments on the farm or in your life since then.
Yeah, there's been a lot happening. When we last spoke, we only had a Gentle Barn in California, and since then we have started a Gentle Barn in Tennessee, which is very, very exciting. We started it because of a cow who lost his foot. And we were able to get him an amputation and much-needed surgeries and then build him a prosthesis. And then we were able to build a Gentle Barn in Tennessee to be home for him and all his friends. So there are now 20 rescued animals in Tennessee that live at the Gentle Barn, and that family is growing as we speak.
Wow. This is a lot of work. Tell us about your staff and volunteer network.
Oh, my God. We couldn't possibly do this work without our staff and volunteers. They are just heroes. They're amazing. They work so, so hard, and they're so dedicated to the animals and to our mission. So we have a very small staff. It's only a staff of I think it's 15 now. And we all wear multiple hats, and we're all very, very, very busy doing the work that we do. But the backbone of this organization is actually the volunteers, people who come in and they help us clean stalls, they help us groom horses, they help us hug cows, they help us give the much-needed attention to all the animals and make them feel loved and welcomed and cherished at our organization. And they also help us host open to the public Sundays, when people from all over the world come to visit the animals and meet them and hear their stories of resilience. And our volunteers become docents for our animals, making sure that if they need something, their voice is heard, and if they don't want to be pets, they don't have to.
That's awesome. I love that you're also so involved in community events. I was reading an article about the 7 traits of highly effective farm sanctuaries by Andrew Kirshner, which highlights the importance of providing a vibrant, humane education program, being creative, and maintaining a connection with and giving back to the community of supporters. I was pleased to see that your website discourages guests from bringing non-vegan food to the sanctuary. Do you educate about a vegan lifestyle during your tours?
Yes, absolutely. Promoting a plant-based diet and vegan lifestyle is really the undercurrent of every single solitary thing that we do. We really work to get in front of as many people as we can to expand their hearts and their minds to what animals go through and to inspire them and encourage them to make kinder choices through their diet and through the things that they purchase. I found out a statistic recently that just blew my mind. It's that when one person adopts a plant-based diet, we save 198 animals every single year. So to have a sanctuary and rescue as many animals as possible, that's certainly very, very important to the animals that you're rescuing. But I don't think that it's going to bring about global change. I think the only way that we can bring about global change is when we can get in front of as many people as we can and really teach them about a plant-based diet so that they, in turn, can each save 198 animals every year. And that's, in my opinion, how the world is going to change.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that is highly effective that we do at the Gentle Barn is we have people, docents, volunteers, with the animals when we're open to the public telling the animals stories. And not in a gruesome, in-your-face way, but in a very gentle, matter-of-fact way. So, you know, cows that are rescued from the dairy industry and chickens that are rescued from the egg industry and animals that are rescued from slaughter, their stories get a chance to be told. And in telling the stories, people get an idea of what these animals go through. And then I actually give presentations in the amphitheater several times a day to all our visitors when we're open to the public. And I talk about the incredible impact that each person can make by adopting a plant-based diet and how it saves 198 animals every year and how it saves an acre of trees every year and how it saves 600 gallons of water every single day.
Mm-hmm.
So that we're not just helping animals, but we're also helping the environment and the planet and our own health. And so I think people get very motivated when you can hug a cow, find out the statistics of adopting a plant-based diet and how effective it can be, and then simultaneously eat a vegan hot dog.
Right.
So it kind of touches up all the points, because we serve vegan food here when people come and visit. People can see how delicious a vegan diet can be. They see the intelligence and the affection of these beautiful animals who fall in love with them. And then they find out how effective they can be in adopting the much-needed change to a plant-based diet. And it really empowers people to walk out the door wanting to do better for the animals and for the environment and for ourselves.
Well, speaking of that, can you tell us how you measure your success?
Yeah, I measure our success in two ways. In the faces of the animals that we've saved, watching their eyes fill with hope again, watching their faces relax and become soft and joyous again, watching them play and make friends and not be afraid again. When I do that for the animals, there's no greater feeling in the world to know that we breathe the life back into these creatures and then they have now found peace and freedom. It's mm-hmm. a wonderful, wonderful feeling. And the other way that we measure success is in the feedback that we're getting from our guests from around the world and the people that follow us on social media, because really we're making an impact to people who have never been here. But through the stories that we tell on social media and through the stories and the interactions with the animals that people have when they visit, we're able to open people's hearts. And when people write back to us and let us know that they went vegan because of us, or they're having a gentle Thanksgiving because of us, or they no longer buy eggs because of us, or they no longer wear leather because of us, it just makes our day. I mean, it shows us that we really are making a difference for animals and people. And that feedback will just keep us working forever.
It is motivating when you hear those stories. As an activist myself, I kind of keep track of the number of people that I've veganized because it reminds me when I have down days that I have made an impact in some people's lives and hopefully animals' lives as well once they make that full transition to veganism. It is inspiring to remember those things. Thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you. You too.
And I noticed on your webpage that you list photos of the animals and heartbreaking stories of their lives before you rescued them. They each have monthly adoption rates next to them in case people want to become donors. Can you tell me where you typically obtain your animals from? And do you avoid buying them from auctions since that perpetuates the commodification of animals?
Yeah, absolutely. So we work with the police department, animal control, other rescues, and regular civilians just calling us and making us aware of cruelty cases and things that are not right. Whether or not to buy animals out of pain and suffering is a huge controversy that I think every person that is involved in animal rescue has to face. On the one hand, you don't want to put money into a system that is causing the pain and suffering to begin with. On the other hand, if you're looking into the eyes of an animal that you know you can buy their life and their freedom to save them, you know, how can you walk away? So it is a huge dilemma for us. And I think that the way we've rationalized doing it is we're not going to just show up at a slaughterhouse or something and just buy out animals because, again, we're perpetuating the problem by giving them money in the hands of the people that are causing the suffering. But we do work on cruelty cases and hoarding cases and shutting down pounds that are ineffective and shutting down backyard butchers that are causing a lot of suffering. And when we're working to shut down a cruelty case, sometimes while we're in the process of shutting that cruelty case down, if there are animals in the very beginning that we can buy their safety and their freedom while we're building a case to shut the whole thing down, then we have done that in the past. So there was, not too many years ago, there was a backyard butcher, and we pulled out over 60 animals from that place. And in the very beginning, we were building a case to shut him down. And so we had to gather evidence. We had to befriend the guy. We had to come and take pictures and video and interact with the man to build a case, which eventually ended up with the man being sent to jail and stopped from what he was doing, which is wonderful. But in the very beginning, while we were building the case, we would come across animals that if we didn't buy them and get them out of there, they would have died. And so in the very beginning, we did purchase some animals to get them to safety, but we kept working to the point where we could shut him down and save all the animals.
Right. So. Well, it is a tough call sometimes. I definitely understand that struggle. I'm so impressed with how efficiently and properly you run your sanctuary. In your book, you wrote about wildfires that affected your sanctuary, and you were able to rescue them because you had an emergency rescue plan in place. Can you tell us that story?
Yeah, absolutely. In 2007, we were hit with our first and hopefully last wildfire. It was extremely terrifying to watch the smoke come and the flames come, and there was no time to think. There was no time to really plan anything. And so thankfully, we had a fire evacuation plan in place, and we were able to put it to the test. And it was so effective that we were able to pull every single one of the animals out to safety, and nobody was harmed. And that's a tall task because we had between 80 and 100 animals at the time. And the place was completely surrounded by a huge wall of fire and smoke that we couldn't hear or see or breathe. But we just followed the plan and we got all the animals out to safety. And it was so effective that not only does that plan help us in the event of a natural disaster, but we started our own evacuation program where we have a command center, we have trucks and trailers, and now within driving distances, if there's a natural disaster or a fire, we go to other neighborhoods and we help people pull their animals out to safety and even bring them to the general barn for sanctuary if we have to. We've been able to support the community that way.
Wow, you're such a hero. I've got goosebumps just thinking about this. What an angel. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And you're hosting a vegan Thanksgiving dinner, which will also include a drum circle. Listeners can find out about that on the website posted on our website, which is animalvoices.org. Do you want to talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, it's the greatest event of the year. It is so wonderful. At every Gentle Barn location, so here in California and in Tennessee and wherever we go next, it will be incorporated in our program. On the day of Thanksgiving, people arrive at 3 from literally around the world. And the first thing that we do is we cuddle turkeys and feed them pie and celebrate their life. And then we sit down to a gourmet, absolutely delicious vegan feast. And once everybody has eaten and drinking their fill, we go out and we have a Native American drum circle where a Native chief comes and tells stories and folklore and guides us in a drum circle. That kind of the idea of it is that at the end of the evening, everyone drives or flies back to where they came from all over the world, but our hearts always beat as one and we are always connected, not only connected to each other, but connected to the earth and to the other animals. And hopefully that inspires people to go and be kind. And it's just a wonderful event because the energy is wonderful. It's just a feel-good experience where you're sitting with 250 other people to celebrate life and peace and gentleness. And
wow.
It gives you so much hope. It's really just a lovely evening. And tickets are on sale at our website, gentlebarn.org.
How much are tickets?
I think in Tennessee they're a $100 donation per person, and here in LA they're $150 right now, but the prices do go up the closer we get to Thanksgiving. So I urge people, if you want to get that nice low price, to register now.
Well, that is much more spiritual than sitting around a table with a dead turkey on it and mashed potatoes with butter and gravy and all the rest, which I am now boycotting every year, like a lot of vegans do. So
yeah, absolutely. That's how the event started, because when I was newly vegan, it hurt my heart to go sit with my family and see the corpse in the middle of the table. It just really made me so sad. And I wanted to be with my family, but I just couldn't sit there thinking of the poor animal that suffered to get there.
Yeah.
And so I had this idea that if, like, people like me from all over the world could break bread at the same table and celebrate life instead of looking at a corpse, then maybe we can connect with each other and celebrate the future and hope. And it's really great.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show today, Ellie. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And thank you for doing what you're doing on behalf of the animals.
No problem. You can find out more about the Gentle Barn at gentlebarn.org. Ellie's book is called My Gentle Barn, which makes for a great gift. And you can attend a Gentle Thanksgiving. As we mentioned, we will post that information on our page, animalvoices.org, and we'll talk to you again soon, Ellie. I hope to come visit you one day with all the Animal Voices crew on a big old road trip.
I'd love to show you around. That would be amazing.
Okay, I will definitely meet you one day. Thanks so much for making time for us. I know you're so busy.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, bye-bye.
You've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio here in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us on our next show next Friday, October the 7th. It'll be our annual Thanksgiving show, and Jen will be producing. She'll be focusing on different forms of activism and featuring interviews with activists of varying forms of creative advocacy. So we are ending the show now with one of my favorite songs in dedication of Ellie's Sanctuary, The Gentle Barn. This is Sanctuary Song by Daniel Redwood, and please join us again for Animal Voices next week, and stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock right now with Alex Smith. Thank you for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animal.
You are someone, not something. You're welcome here with your broken wing or wounded leg or branded skin. This is your home now, come on in. Known the pain, now feel the joy. What God has made, no man should destroy. From this day on, in the sun and rain, you can roam through the
has come home. Hang out with your friends, 'cause you are not alone. I want to tell the world what they've done to you so wrong. I want to sing for you a sanctuary song. It means as much to you as mine to me. I know that this is true. Your loving heart reaches out to mine, and the light in your eyes is the time. This is the place for us all to feel compassion's healing grace, and pray for peace for all who share this one earthly home, so green, so fair. Jump and play till the cows come home. Hang out with your friends, yes, 'cause you are not alone. I want to tell the world what they've done to you so wrong. I want to sing for you this sanctuary song. May the whole world sing for you. May the whole world be for you a sanctuary.